Hello and welcome to podcast number 21 from the Self-Publishing Formula. This week we're starting Out and About.
Two writers, one just starting out, the other a bestseller. Join James Blatch and Mark Dawson and their amazing guests as they discuss how you can make a living telling stories. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Customer information. Please do not leave cases or parcels unattended anywhere on the station. Any unattended articles are likely to be removed without warning.
Okay, so it is a Friday morning. It's cold and it's early, about 8 o'clock, misty in Salisbury. And I'm just about to get onto a train to travel into London to go and see a PR professional. So I've always had kind of mixed feelings about paying for PR. My view on things is it's usually possible to pay for things or to arrange things like that yourself. And I've been pretty lucky with the things I've been able to arrange over the course of the last couple of years. I had a big article in Forbes, which was a real boost for my credibility within the author community. And that was sourced just at the London Book Fair last year after I did some work for Amazon on their stall, did some Q&As for them. And they were looking for someone to speak to Forbes, and I was the person they gave a polite kick up the backside to go and do that. And that was wonderful. And since then, other things have come in off the back of that. And other things I've been able to arrange myself. Another good example of something that just happened serendipitously, and this was through the Forbes article. I was contacted a couple of weeks ago by a producer for a Radio 4 documentary. Radio 4 is a big national radio station in the UK for those not in the UK. And they want me to be a mentor on a five-part series that will be spread across a week where a rookie novelist tries to self-publish or looks at publishing in general. So obviously I'm up for that. It'll give me great more credibility, more exposure. So I'm definitely interested in that. But bubbling away in the background all the while has been the thought that I could do something additional, some rocket fuel could be added to build up my standing, both within the author community for people who are writing books and need help with getting them out there, and also for sale of my books. It's certainly a big byproduct of my advertising has been an increase in sales, as you'd expect, but not just off the ads, just my brand awareness in general has led to an increase in sales. So that's something that I'm interested in too. So I spoke to my agent and asked them to recommend a firm of professionals that I could go and see, and I approached a couple myself. I got a few quotes, eye-watering quotes, in one case of £15,000 up to £20,000 for performance that isn't guaranteed, which bugs me a bit. I'm not comfortable with paying something when there's no what we'd call key performance indicators. In other words, and I hate that kind of language, but I want to know what I'm getting, what's the bang for the buck. And they weren't prepared to give me that, so made me a little bit nervous. So anyway, we'll see how this goes this morning. I'm going to do some writing on the train, 90 minutes into London Waterloo. And I'll go to the meeting, and then I'm going to meet James afterwards, and we'll sit down and have a chat about how it went, what my thoughts are, what's been promised, what isn't promised, maybe even mention the cost if that's something that I can mention if it's not confidential. And we'll just chat about PR in general and what is and isn't possible. So with that, I've got a coffee. The train is just about to pull in to the station, so I'm going to get over there right now, sit down and get ready. And let's see how it goes.
Okay, well, Mark promised that I would be invited along at some point. I wasn't, I noticed, invited for the important meeting with the PR people, but here we are. We're in a rather curious place, Mark, aren't we? This is your old haunt here, isn't it?
Yeah, I used to write
5 or 6 years ago. It's a place called the Jeffrey Museum in East London, and it's well worth a visit if you like what houses would have been like over the last 400 or 500 years. Perhaps not. I'm not selling it the best, perhaps there. But people aren't here for my advice on places to visit in London. They probably want to know more about what we've just been talking about.
Yeah, but it's nice to set the scene. And I had a quick wander through the museum, and I think my adolescent daughter and young son would probably not forgive me for bringing them here, because it's quite dry, but for us our age it's lovely. And who knows, if you're a writer, this is exactly the sort of place you might become inspired with ideas. Anyway, as you say, not here to talk about that today. We're here to talk about PR, which is a bit of a dark art in many people's eyes. You set the scene as you left Salisbury to why you were having this meeting today. So let me just ask you your impression, having had the meeting. Is this something, do you think, you want to move forward with?
Yeah, definitely. I was really impressed. I mean, I've been thinking about it for a while, as I mentioned earlier, about PR and whether it was something that I should do organically or whether we should get some professionals in to help. And it's worth mentioning right up front now that we're looking at this as a kind of a two-step process. So part of it will be for my books, half of it will be for my books, then half of it will be for the non-fiction business that we've built at SPF. And yeah, I was very impressed. I mean, it was in a very trendy office near King's Cross with a very low door that I walloped my head on as I went in. But they're very, very nice, very switched on. I had a meeting with a couple of them, including the proprietor. I was very impressed. They'd done their research. They knew about me. They knew about my books. And I'm definitely interested in taking it on.
What are they going to do?
Well, that's a good question. It was one of the questions that I had. They've already put together a kind of a very broad based approach about the kinds of places that they'll try and place stories. So that could be offline press, newspapers. It could be the radio, something that you know lots about, and TV, something else you know a lot about. So we talked about my story, which is, I suppose, reasonably interesting, no more interesting than other self-publishers, but the whole writing all those books on the train in 2014, making that Forbes article, that's always been a big thing for people to find me, is what Forbes said about me after the London Book Fair last year. And we just kind of talked about that, what it might look like. The thing that PRs are not going to do is they're not going to guarantee a level of coverage, because it's not something that's in their gift. They're half of the equation. What they do is they go out to media organizations and try and place the stories. They can't promise you that they will get results, although I got the impression that they were very confident this morning that this is the kind of story that should be able to sell quite easily.
Okay, I should have added at the beginning that we're in the cafe. Yes. Section. It's reasonably noisy as they clear up plates, but my sandwiches are about to arrive as well, which I'm looking forward to. Okay, so there's a business decision for you to make, and you would have listened carefully to that. I've got a couple of questions before I ask you about where you see the worth and how you're going to measure that. How, particularly if you're going across these two areas, self-publishing formula, also Mark Dawson, the author, how they present you has got to be carefully thought out. And it's got to be quite specifics sell well in terms of stories, and generalities don't sell well.
I think the what we're looking at here is my profile, and it's raising my profile. So I'm reasonably well known now within the author community, but it's a big community that's growing every day. So this is just talking about the SPF side of the business. So, you know, we've got several, you know, 5 figures worth of authors on our mailing list now, but that doesn't even touch the surface of how many people are thinking about getting into this space, thinking about doing advertising. Even the kind of basic entry-level stuff, there's a huge amount of people who are interested in this now. One of the things I said this morning was that it's very easy for us who are within the industry and steeped within it to kind of assume a level of knowledge that would be common for everyone. So, I mean, I had a chat with a Radio 4 producer who's interested in doing a documentary about me, and he knew nothing about self-publishing, and this was with the benefit of some research because he was talking to me, but he still knew nothing about what was possible. So that was very instructive, I thought. So getting the message out, the story, you know, the origin story about how I went from working with you at the BBFC and getting into a position where I've had 1 million downloads of my books now and a significant income. That's a compelling story that people would be interested to hear. So there's that. And then on the other side of the business, of my book business, raising my profile as an author is something that I'm very interested in doing. And they've worked with some big authors, including one other very big indie author whose name eludes me now, but it's an erotica author who hit the New York Times list without knowing it, hit number one on New York Times without knowing it, off the back of E.L. James's success with 50 Shades, and is still doing really, really well. So they've got a campaign that they've run for her. She's been in all the big magazines, the big newspapers. That's obviously a useful analogue for what we're going to look at with what they might be able to do for me. And as we record this now in March, London Book Fair is coming up, and they're heavily involved with the book fair. I'm talking on the Amazon stand again. It's a perfect opportunity to get into things like the bookseller over here, and to spin that story off and have interviews with, you know, that's where I had the interview for the Forbes article was after LBF last year. So there's lots of opportunities for that now. So it's a perfect time for us to be looking at what might be possible.
Okay. And in terms of other authors, I mean, I'm guessing, somebody who's writing their first book like me probably doesn't need to invest in PR at this stage. But do you see this as an important step up at some point in an author's career?
Yeah, I think you get to a point where you can only do so much yourself. So everything that I've placed so far, I've been interviewed in the Financial Times, across BBC Radio. I've had approaches from the Telegraph, the Forbes article, all that kind of stuff. That was either stuff that I organised myself or stuff that came to me perhaps through Amazon's press office on a couple of occasions, or other times just people who somehow Googled self-publishing and have come to me, probably through that Forbes article, which still ranks very, very highly. But there does come a point where you need a bit of accelerant. And I'm not a PR professional. I wouldn't know... Number one, I wouldn't know how to pitch a story to a newspaper. And number two, I just don't have time. It's not something that I have the capacity to fit in. So I'm at the point now where I think it's a decision I'm able to make. And I think the benefits are potentially quite big for both sides of our business. I've seen examples. I heard examples this morning from other authors and campaigns that they run. And you can get into the Daily Mail on a Saturday. You can sell enough books just off the back of that to hit the top of the bestseller charts. Same goes for, you know, TV on the sofas on breakfast TV. That kind of thing is really powerful. And still, it works very well for traditional publishers. But the key thing is, no one I'm aware of in this country, a bit different in the States, no one in this country is really making a big play out of the fact that it's possible to do all of that yourself. So there's a really good story there, and they could see that. I could tell that they think that's compelling. Something that, you know, I'm selling more books than some traditionally published authors, lots of them, with no backup, just me and my laptop and the train, you know.
And it's an important thing to remember that when we're talking about this, we are talking very much about new media, which is the area that we operate in. But in a lot of the PR, you'll be aiming that at traditional media. So it won't be surprising if this is a revelation to them that things like how people buy books and consume books has changed, because they're still printing newspapers and magazines and struggling a little bit to get online. You mentioned the Mail, that actually does have a very successful online presence, as does the biggest in the world, as does the Guardian's probably invested in that. But a lot of the other newspapers are not really sure where to go on that front. So you're pitching to the old industry and still using them for what they're worth, which is to broaden your exposure, I guess, beyond new media.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I know from my own sampling of my audience that my readers skew towards the older end of the spectrum, so between, say, 40 and up, with a preponderance probably between 50 and 65, you know, so they're older, not necessarily, therefore, the ones that you'd assume to be the most new media savvy. They might not be the ones who are most likely to see a Facebook ad, for example. So, although lots of them are, I know that a lot of them are, this is potentially a very interesting way and a powerful way to access a big slice of the population who I can be reasonably confident will like the books just the same as other readers who've heard about me from ads or, you know, from Amazon or those kinds of means. It's potentially a big broadening of my audience.
And your books are in print as well, which is probably quite important here.
They are, yeah, they are in print. Yeah, so, I mean, I don't sell, I don't know how many, 1,000, 2,000 copies a month, maybe, of print books. So, yeah, there is a... The thing with print is they're in print, but they're online, right? So you can't go into your local bookstore very easily and just, you know, they're not sitting next to James Patterson's books. You have to go to Amazon and order them. So, yes, I can cater to readers who don't like reading on e-readers.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, if you're trying to capture a market who won't see a Facebook advert, but they probably will go on to Amazon and order a book, but they'll probably won't have a Kindle, or they might not have a Kindle. There's certainly someone in that category.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, I know from...
Other e-readers are available.
Yes, absolutely they are. And I know that, you know, we've spoken to Adam Croft, who's done very well with ads as a result of doing what we've been doing. I know he's seen a massive spike in his print sales. I mean, really significant, much more than I sell. That's another avenue of another way people can consume my stories that I haven't really exploited yet.
Yeah. Okay, so going back to the figures, two answers before, the bottom line, and you're a businessman, so there is a bottom line here. Do you know how much this is going to cost you, and do you have a timescale for making that back, and how are you going to measure that?
Yeah, that's interesting. So I do. They've quoted a figure, which I'm probably not going to mention now because I should think it's confidential. I don't want to go into too much detail, but it's four figures, and I was quoted. I'll mention a couple of figures from others that I spoke to. I was recommended a firm. In East London, and they came back quoting £15,000, so, you know, for $22,000, something like that, which was a lot of money. I was uncomfortable with that, and the thing is, they won't give you guarantees. As I mentioned earlier, they'll know what we, you know, I said this earlier, I hate KPI and that kind of acronym, but that is key. You need something to measure how effective it is, at least in terms of, have you had an article placed this month in exchange for the big spend to, you know, that I've invested, and they weren't able to give me that, so I wasn't happy with that. So we're significantly less than that, but I was very impressed with them. They're very professional, and they've got a lot of experience with traditional and, you know, and new media. In terms of how I measure it, it's difficult. It's not the same as with a Facebook ad. You can measure that to the last cent, right? You can attribute sales directly to a particular ad. You know exactly how much you've spent, exactly how much you've made, so you can calculate exactly what your return is. With this, only half of the equation is visible. You know what you've spent. It's difficult, probably actually impossible, to quantify the precise effect of that investment. What you would have to do, and what we will look at doing, is for us, for SPF, we'd be looking at, does that accelerate the growth of our mailing list? That we can measure. So we'd look at that. For me, for books, what I'd be looking at is benchmarking. So I'd be benchmarking what I would make before the campaign starts and after. And, you know, if everything else is equal, then you can be reasonably confident that the difference is can be attributed to the campaign that you're running.
So we can see a route through an audience who you might not attract through your existing advertising that you can get to with your author books, your books as an author. In terms of the factual side, the non-fiction side, and this is, you know, something we talk about a lot on the podcast, and for many of our authors, it's an area that they're actively considering or getting into, and it's an area that we have with SPF. But the people who will respond positively to that are probably in the digital space, aren't they? I mean, isn't that one of the problems here, that you're using PR money to go to old media consumers to sell them something that's new media?
Yeah, that's true, but you're amplifying your message, so it's probably fair to say that most people who are interested in self-publishing are going to be at least conversant with the technology. They certainly should be, or they're going to have a difficult time of it. But they also read newspapers, and they also listen to the radio, and they watch TV in the morning. So anything that can increase my profile and my authority in that space is going to be a good thing.
We're going to get you on the sofa with Susanna, who's one of the breakfast presenters here in the UK.
Is this the one you fancy?
I just find her very intellectually stimulating.
Yes, that would be a goal. I was quite close actually to being on Breakfast TV a long time ago when I had my second book published, when I basically put the boot in for lawyers, because I was a lawyer at the time. When that came out, I was contacted by the BBC and said, would I come on to the onto the breakfast show to talk about how awful lawyers are. And given as I was just about to be sacked for writing that, I decided I'd better keep a low profile. So I haven't done that, but I'd be completely up for that. I'm not frightened by the going on TV or the radio. You know, we've been on the radio before.
Yeah, indeed. And we do a podcast every week, so we're experts. Yes, and if you get onto Jimmy Kimmel, I'm definitely coming along to that as well. Okay, well, look, this is something you're going to move. There's a couple of decisions to make, and I think this is something that people might be interested in as we progress, and we will go through this together and try and work out whether it's going to be worth it. It might be, like all ventures, particularly PR, it is a long-term thing. It's what we, you know, I kind of work in the PR market, video production. I'm about to jet off to another meeting in a moment to commission a video for a client in East London here. And we always say to people, don't blow your wad on one big all singing dancing moment and then do nothing for 2 years. You've got to commit to the long term. So I think I would personally say you've got to commit to this for at least 12 months, a whole year of this, see where it goes. Don't worry about your figures for the first 6 months, but then start to get interested in how things look 12 months on than they did when you started. And
that's a significant investment. That is a pretty decent chunk of change for a 12-month retainer, which is effectively what it would be. But I think it would be interesting for other authors anyway, just to see, because you know, you can place this kind of stuff yourself. It isn't impossible. I've done it a few times, and if I had a bit more time, I would probably learn how to do it a bit better, so I didn't need to bring anybody else in. But it could be interesting to see if we can get a few nice articles placed. We can try and track the effect of that. And I'll talk about the experience of being interviewed or writing the article, and maybe we can see. We'll talk about the effect that it has on book sales and signups for SPF, and whether we get more podcast listeners, all that kind of stuff. We can be completely transparent about that, so that other authors can have a think about, you know, if they're at the level that I'm at, whether they want to invest in a third party to run that for them, or if they'd like to invest a bit of time in doing it themselves. I think that's something that we can give them some help with.
Yeah. Well, at some point, I imagine we're going to interview these PR people as part of our podcast.
Yeah,
be, if they're
absolutely
up for that. They should be up for that. Good. Okay. Well, I could do some media training for you on how to appear on the sofa on breakfast television. Although I have to tell you, my retainer is eye-watering. So, you know, it's going to put the PR people into shame. Great. I'm looking forward to my sandwich in East London. I've got another meeting to go to, and but thanks. We will follow this story because it's all about the story for you. It was loud in that cafe, Mark, so I do want to first of all say that what I normally like to do for recording conditions is to have ultimate control of the room and the environment, but I felt I couldn't stand up and tell everyone to shut up whilst we had our conversation, so we should say it was loud in the cafe.
And if you'd done that, you wouldn't have got your sandwiches?
I wouldn't have got my sandwiches, or if I had got the sandwiches, I probably would have been wary about eating them. Anyway, fascinating, fascinating place to go to, one of your old haunts, as you said there. And we are now, how far, I mean, when did we record that? How far away are we now?
Goodness, you put me on the spot there. It must be 3 months ago, something like that.
Yeah, it's about 3 months. So that was the beginning of this, for you, a new venture, as you explained as we were talking, and something had been on your mind, and there was a lot of unknowns going into it. Well, we've got 12 weeks or so of results to look at now, and we can go through those. I think the first thing we should perhaps talk about is how much this venture has cost you, and a slight warning that it's going to be a high figure. And you told me at the time, and obviously it's something we went into together, so I was a little bit taken aback by the cost of this. And most people are going to think, wow, this is so out of my depth. But actually, for some people, this will be a potential investment. But there's a lot you can learn from what we did here that will be relevant, even if you're not going to spend this sort of money. So if we make people faint by telling them how much you paid for this publicity service.
Well, yes, we paid for it, really. So we split the cost between the two sides of the business. So on the one hand, there's my books, and on the other hand, there's the nonfiction side of the business with the self-publishing formula. And the cost was £5,000 plus tax, so came in at about £6,000. And we split that 50-50. And then I got an email this morning from my accountant, James, and I put the expense in, and he said, The PR was expensive at £12,000, wasn't it, Mark? I was like, what? Wasn't 12. But I paid them twice. So.
Oh no.
So that's great. So yeah, anyway, they're paying me back the duplicate amount. But
this is I do the figures.
I know. I tend not to get involved with that kind of stuff. But yeah, so it was reasonably expensive, but not as expensive as others that I was quoted. I mentioned one in the when we had our chat that was coming in at around about 15,000, which was for the year, but still was a bit on the expensive side, I thought.
Yeah, and we've learned some things going through the process, and I think we'll come to our sort of conclusions towards the end of this discussion in terms of whether it was worth it or not. But there are other ways, I guess, of doing it. And we know, I know of at least one of our students, actually, who's doing very well and has, you know, good income from his selling. And he balked a little bit at the similar sort of quotes that he got and decided to go solo and basically put out feeders to his friends and family to see if he could get some help getting some publicity. And he works at it that way. And that is the other way of doing it. But what did we get out of this? What did your side of the business get out of it? What did we get out of it as SPF, and was it worth it? Where do we start? Should we look at some of the actual tangible results?
Yeah, I suppose that's what it comes down to, is what actually was arranged as a result of the campaign that was run. And I think we did pretty well. I think we did get value for money. So we had quite a big an interview on the online section of the Telegraph. That came, the Telegraph, for those not in the UK, is one of the big broadsheet newspapers over here. And they sent a reporter down to Salisbury to, it was with me for a couple of hours. We had a good chat about self-publishing and the industry and how I do things. And that ran, which was great.
I thought the photography was fantastic in that article.
Yeah, I don't know who took those photos. Yeah.
I never get a credit. Anyway,
yes, no bitterness there from Mr. Blatch. And the next one was the Daily Mail, which, so that's I think, unless this has changed, it certainly was the most trafficked newspaper website in the world.
Yeah.
Daily Mail is very, very big worldwide for that, usually with a never-ending stream of celebrity gossip. But they put an article in, I can't remember exactly what the section was, but it was one of the finance sections, I think. So they asked me some questions on bits and pieces to do with financial side of self-publishing. So that was great. We also were, I was interviewed by a podcast network. They call themselves Monocle. They have a pretty big worldwide reach, very professional offices in London. So I went down there a couple of weeks ago, and I think that came out this week, so 2 or 3 days before we're recording this. That was great. And then this was also kind of running over the course of the London Book Fair, and the PR handler, I suppose you'd call her, that I was assigned, marched me into the bookseller offices at London Book Fair, introduced me to the guy who owns it and runs it. And on the back of that, I spoke at their media conference about 2 weeks ago. So that was me on a stage in front of 500 PR professionals from the traditional publishing industry, which was good fun and a good chance to kind of show them how indies do things. I think that went down quite well. And if I was in the business for extra work coming off the back of that, I would have been able to probably get a new job. I had several people asking for me to come into London and talk to them about what I do with social media. So that was all pretty good as well.
They can't afford you.
I told them that they couldn't know, and I don't want the job, so I ran away.
I hope you said I don't get out of bed for that, and just walked off as I left them standing there. Okay, so the Daily Telegraph and Daily Mail, again, if you're not in the UK, you may not be familiar with these, although the Mail does have a good global reach now, but they are big hitters in this part of the world. I mean, we're talking, I think the Daily Mail may be the most read newspaper, as well as being one of the world's biggest websites. So this is definitely the equivalent of the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post level of paper, but here in the UK and a little bit wider than that. We got a couple of other hits, didn't we, that didn't necessarily come from that, but perhaps indirectly, because Amazon put you forward for some things and because your profile's raised elsewhere, it makes you a more attractive proposition to other entities, doesn't it? So
it does, yeah. So Amazon wheeled me out now and again to do bits and pieces, to talk about self-publishing with a kind of Amazonian slant. So I was at London Book Fair again this year on a stage for them a couple of times, which was great. And they had an event celebrating Shakespeare's birthday. So whenever that was.
April the 23rd. April.
I was going to say April 23rd, yeah. So there you go.
He was born and died on the same day.
Oh, well.
St. George's Day, old boy.
You're the man we need for a pop quiz. Yeah, so I went down to London and I did some kind of down-the-line radio interviews for about, I don't know, maybe 10 or 11 local radio stations in the UK, some bigger than others. That was pretty good. And then kind of off the back of that, Amazon introduced me to some journalists at the Times, and they ran a fairly lengthy back page piece on me and their fame and fortune section, which was quite amusing. But that was great as well.
Yeah, I used to be on the other side of that, of course, when I was a local radio presenter in the UK, and you'd get somebody who was on their 14th interview of the day sitting in a cubicle in London. But normally people are pretty good at keeping the energy level up through that. So as I say, it's difficult for us to say they were a result of the publicity deal we had. They weren't a direct result of, but on the other hand, people will say, oh yeah, they'll do a bit of Googling. That Daily Mail article comes up and suddenly it's a yes rather than a no to the idea of it.
That's the thing. And in terms of the building authority, so that was the one of the purposes, was to build my recognition within the author community. And you're right. If people are thinking about taking one of the courses that we do, then they're going to want to know a bit about the instructor. And it's all well and good going onto a sales page and reading stuff that we've put together. That's not necessarily going to be something that they're going to, you know, that might not be enough for them to persuade them to go ahead. But if they do a bit of research and then they Google, they're going to see the Forbes article that came up a couple of years ago, or any of these ones that we've placed since then. So it's all very useful. And of course, we can do a page on our website with, you know, kind of a credentials page. That's very helpful as well. And, you know, it's a good calling card for people who want to come and, you know, check out, you know, a little bit more about my story, and just to satisfy themselves that I, you know, sometimes know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, sometimes. So
not always.
Yeah. So on the nonfiction side, it's easier, I think, to see the immediate benefits of this and that sort of credibility that you get, as you say, if people are about to invest in a chunk of change for a course, to see you validated by big hitters like Forbes and the Daily Mail could just be the difference between buying and not buying. There may well be people listening to podcasts who did their due diligence on you, saw that you were credible, saw that you had attracted the publicity and interest elsewhere. So, and that translates itself into commercial value for us. Move on a little bit to why you started it, the purpose of that, and then try and bring this round to your career as a fiction author and whether it also gave you tangible results or anything that you can quantify. But let's just start with why we did this. And obviously we talked about this before you invested the money in it. And that authority was one of the things we were looking for. Authority as a figure and a thought leader. I hate using those expressions, but people use them. A thought leader in the self-publishing space was very important for selling the course. And I think there's a big tick in that particular box.
Yeah, that was one of the main aims on that side of the business, was to do that. And I'm happy that was met. I think we got good value for money for that part of the equation. But on selling books, the other part, so the kind of the book selling part of my business, that's a bit more difficult to quantify, because the difference between this and digital marketing, so things like Facebook ads, Twitter ads, YouTube, that kind of stuff, it's much more difficult to track conversions. So we can track how effective a Facebook ad is by linking it directly to sales that are made after people have viewed that ad. And you can quantify that all the way down to the last cent. So they're very, very accountable in that sense. It's a bit more difficult with slightly more fluffy traditional media tactics. And this is exactly what this kind of PR is. It's very difficult to determine how many sales have been generated as a result of a media campaign. There are ways to do it. You can kind of run benchmarks and kind of do a before and after comparison, and other kind of anecdotal methods whereby, I mean, I've had a few emails from readers who have said that they've enjoyed the Milton books and they found out about me after seeing an article in the Times, for example, or the Telegraph. So I'm happy enough to say that it has had an effect. Have I seen kind of a launch up to the top of the bestseller lists? No, I haven't. The agency that we went with have done a few more campaigns, obviously, like this, and they've had another self-published writer. Probably, I can't actually remember her name at the moment, but I'm hoping to get her on the podcast. She writes I think erotica, pretty much, so kind of E.L. James territory. And she was had a big feature in the Mail, and she did launch into the top 10 on Amazon after that came out. So right. I think it is possible to get that kind of result.
Well, you've got to think that one of the things that's happening at the moment is that self-publishing is growing exponentially every year. And therefore, all the more important to separate yourself from the crowd to get some edge over your competition, something that's going to turn that person who's browsing your book into a purchaser. I would think even more important is getting this type of mainstream publicity.
Yeah, and I mean, this is something that, you know, this has been the preserve of traditional publishing for a long time, and I don't think that's right. So, you know, I if I wanted to get a traditional deal, I probably could at this point. I choose not to, but I also want to demonstrate that it's possible for independent authors to use the same kind of tools that traditionally published authors have had at their disposal for a long time. So there's something to be said for that. I am a bit of an evangelist for independent publishing. So it's important for me to also to be out there and shouting as loud as I can for those authors who might not be able to get a traditional deal, just so that they know there's another way that they can get their books out and reach readers. You don't need to rely on gatekeepers anymore. So there's kind of a, it would be putting it too high to say that there's an altruistic motive for that, but there is a nice side effect of this is that it does, everything is increasing awareness of different ways to get stories out there. So that's in the back of my mind all the time as well.
Yeah, we shouldn't forget that. Whilst we talk, you know, we talk to our friends like Joe Penn and Nick and so on about the self-publishing revolution and how it's democratizing and it's freeing you up of all the accoutrement that used to exist and all the people saying no to you, which doesn't happen in self-publishing. But for readers, they can be removed from that and not necessarily realise this is happening and realise that there's amazing choice and diversity is available and that the old gatekeepers are gone. So that kind of evangelism actually, I think, can have a knock-on, a positive effect there as well. And just helping to raise the old perception of self-publishing, which is vanity publishing, and people understanding that it's the new smart writer, the successful writer is very often now choosing self-publishing.
Yeah, it's readers and writers. So we're increasing awareness for, you know, for readers that there are new ways and new storytellers that they can go to get stories that they'd enjoy reading. And also for writers, as I said, just educating writers that they don't need to get an agent anymore. It's not really necessary that they don't need to get a publisher. They can just do things themselves. And you're right, it is very easy in our little kind of enclosed bubble. So most of the people listening to this podcast are going to, you know, don't need to be told that self-publishing is a viable way to get their bits and pieces out to new readers. But there are plenty of other writers who, as you say, are still equating independent publishing with vanity publishing, even though the two couldn't be more different. That's a message that needs to be gotten across. And, you know, I saw that reinforced when I was speaking to these journalists, and they couldn't believe what was possible these days with independent publishing. And these are guys working on arts desks, finance desks. They just didn't realize the kind of success that writers can have these days. You know, the people like, you know, the Marie Forces, the Bella Andres, Hugh Harries, those kinds of guys, this kind of success that is possible was just completely eye-opening for those guys when I spoke to them. And it bears remembering from people like us that whilst we might be in the vanguard, we shouldn't assume that everyone has the same level of knowledge that we do.
No, definitely not. And I think, you know, I used to work in the media and the newsroom a few years ago when I started it. The newsrooms were like leading edge. They were kind of the place to be. You knew everything. You read the papers every day. And actually, in my lifetime to where we are now, I see a lot of those newsrooms are being a little bit old fashioned, a little bit stuck in the past. They're in a bubble. Funnily enough, I'm not going to get political here, but we've just had obviously this big EU referendum vote in the UK. And one of the things that came out of that is there is a kind of them and us from the people who are on social media and discussing things at this edge all the time, and the rest of the country, or not quite the rest of the country, but there is definitely, there's work to be done in people understanding how things are changing. And I'm not sure newsrooms are necessarily there anymore. I think they're wondering, they're finding out at the same time as other people, where there's these little pockets of industry. Self-publishing is definitely one of them, which is disruptive, it's changing, and it's slowly having its impact, slowly getting known for what's happening.
Yes, absolutely. So just kind of wrapping this up. I mean, you mentioned other ways of doing this. Like people, spending $5,000 on something like this is a lot of money for most people. It's a lot of money for us. So we thought about it quite carefully before we pulled the trigger on this. But there are other ways. So we mentioned Amazon reached out and got me in front of some fairly influential journalists. So that was great. And we mentioned the other author. We might as well name him, Mr. Croft. It must be time for his weekly mention on the podcast. So, I mean, he's done very well. He got a very good, really excellent coverage on The Guardian. So The Guardian, another great big newspaper over here, has another very well-trafficked website. And he, I think, was on the front page of The Guardian's website for the best part of an afternoon. He was in the comments, and he was quite punchy in the comments as well. And it was very entertaining. He was basically fighting the good fight for the indie community, explaining to people who perhaps a little bit of jealousy was involved from some of the commenters, but Adam was put up a really good fight. And because of that, it got loads and loads of traffic. And then he was invited back to be interviewed with Rachel Abbott, who we spoke to at London Book Fair, another very big selling indie over here in the UK. So he did that. And then he reached out to local television through someone on this podcast, perhaps, James, and was on the BBC as well. So that was great. And that was all through him picking up the phone, or you know, asking in the latter case, asking you to pick up the phone, and that worked quite well too.
Yeah, I mean, the old thing, I just had him in touch with a BBC local television reporter, and you know, it was up to him whether he did anything with it. But as Adam's motto, obviously, there's no harm in asking, and he asked everybody, and he continues to do that, and he's had some really good success. I mean, the Guardian again is a big hitter newspaper in the UK. So it is possible to do it, but it does require a lot of graft on your side of things. I do wonder whether there is going to be, you know, the PR company that we use, very good, and you're really happy with them. I'm going to have a meeting with them soon, so I get to know them as well. But I know that from what you've told me, they're sharp people. They're right at, you know, thoughtful and creative in the way they're approaching things. But PR is itself a very old-fashioned industry. It hasn't changed a lot in decades, and it's possible that these guys and the way they're thinking, the way we've talked about potential business ventures together, are at the vanguard of that industry changing a bit. So it may in time become more accessible on a wider scale. I'm not quite sure how, but you know, who knows how it's going to work out. But it might not always be this type of price to access that type of market.
Yeah, and they are pretty switched on, and they've mentioned that they're interested in reaching out to indie authors, but not at that kind of price, I suspect. Maybe putting together some learnings that indies can use to reach out to news desks or you know, TV stations, all that kind of stuff. They're pretty open to that kind of thing, so we will have a chat with them and hopefully get them on the podcast as well. That could be quite interesting.
Yeah, making it accessible. It is a bit of a dark art. PR, there's a way of doing it, and there's some tricks to it, so some expert advice would definitely go a long way, I think, in that front. So you and I and our other missing partner, who's never on the podcast, we must get him on one day, John Dyer.
No. We don't want to do that.
No, let's not ruin it. We've talked this through, and for us, there is going to be, I think, a further relationship with this organization, and you know, we're happy with the results so far. I'm going to press forward with that. So it's been a successful venture from our point of view. In terms of your book as well, your author side of things, are you happy to continue?
Yeah, I need to work out exactly what kind of a continuing retainer would look like from their perspective and my perspective. So I'm not comfortable. I've never been comfortable with just paying someone to act on a retainer and then kind of, you know, there being no metric that I can measure success against. I'm not going to just pay someone in the off chance that something will come of it. I need to see regular coverage. But if that's something that we feel that we can agree on, then I probably would continue. I think it is useful. And you know, I'm getting closer to things like, we had a couple of quite close calls with getting me on Breakfast Television, which would have been great. There was a Saturday show in the UK on one of the terrestrial channels. They were quite interested too. ITV were interested to get me on their kind of morning sofa. That could be a game changer. So that would be something that I would continue to look to press for. And their view is they know who I am now. They're interested enough to take a nibble the last time. It didn't quite come off for a number of reasons, but maybe it just needs to be reframed in a different way. So, you know, we'll keep that on the back burner.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that happens, and I can tell you from being in a newsroom and occasionally editing programs and deciding, is that sometimes you don't choose somebody because they've been on elsewhere. You always want to be original as a program. If you look at it from that perspective, you do have to take the longer term aspect of this into account. You can't expect all your hits to happen in the same 8-week period because, you know, newsrooms don't want to be seen the sheep, even though actually we do all follow the newspapers or whatever. Good. Okay, well, that's something. I hope that's been of use to people, some sort of live blogging along the way of that that particular journey. It was new territory for you, a little bit of the old business for me, but seeing it from the other side, and it's been interesting.
Yep, I think so. I learned a lot over the course of this little experiment. So yeah, we'll probably keep doing it, and it's something we can check back in with a bit later if things develop further.
Okay. Now we had nonfiction for 3 weeks in a row. We've talked about publicity for self-published authors today. Next week we're going right back to the heart of the self-publishing industry and making sales and building mailing lists. We're going to talk about what's hot in terms of what's online, what's available for you in marketing, particularly with a focus on the social media advertising platforms, and to compare and contrast them, see what's working and what's not. So next week's is going to be a really useful episode. We'll probably do this, you know, at least once a year, perhaps more often than that. We will just delve in, because that's how quickly the industry turns over and changes. But we've got some good stuff to talk about, some recent campaigns and some recent reports from some of our authors and what's working. So that's a good one to look forward to next week. That'll be episode number 22. But from us, bathing in the reflected glory of your publicity, I am, and you're bathing in the reflected glory of your own publicity and your hot tub.
Well, I was just about to say, I'm about to go and bathe my children.
Well, that's glamorous, but necessary.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Self-Publishing Formula podcast. Visit us at selfpublishingformula.com for more information, show notes, and links on today's topics. You can also sign up for our free video series on using Facebook ads to grow your mailing list. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. We'll see you next time.